Welcome, everyone. Here's what's been going on around Vero Beach in Indian River County this week.
And honestly, if you live anywhere in Indian River County right now, you probably feel like you've lived through three entirely different seasons in the last 48 hours. It's good to be here.
No kidding. It is Tuesday, February 24, 2026, and we really do have a much deeper stack of stories than usual for you today.
We do.
We are looking at everything from a pretty historic shift in our local court system to some serious safety concerns right in the neighborhood. But the mission for this deep dive is, well, it's really to connect the dots for you.
Right, because we aren't just reading headlines today.
Exactly.
Exactly.
We are trying to figure out how a decision made up in Tallahassee actually changes the view from your front porch down in Sebastian and, you know, how a massive shift in the jet stream impacts your daily routine.
We have a lot of ground to cover. I mean, going from the very granular details of home rule zoning legislation all the way to the literal temperature out on the street.
Let's start with that temperature, actually, because it is the most immediate thing hitting people right this second. If you stepped outside this morning, you probably wanted to turn right around and run back inside.
It is a classic Florida whiplash event. This really highlights just how extreme our weather patterns can get in a very short window of time.
It really does. I mean, think about the weekend we just had. Hollywood, Florida hit 92 degrees.
Which is wild for February.
It was the hottest temperature in the entire United States. It felt exactly like mid-July. I was actually out there complaining about the humidity on Sunday.
And now here we are on Tuesday morning, and we are looking at a completely different reality. The National Weather Service in Miami, they called this perfectly. They were very confident about this shift. And we are seeing a massive cold front sweeping across the Treasure Coast right now.
Let's get specific with the numbers for everyone. What are we dealing with here? Because, you know, cold in Florida usually just means you put on socks. But this feels different.
This is very different. We are seeing lows dropping into the upper 30s, specifically somewhere between 33 and 39 degrees. And that's happening between 2 a.m. and 9 a.m. this Tuesday morning. But the raw number is deceiving.
How so?
Well, as any northerner will tell you, it's not the heat, it's the humidity. But in this case, it's not the cold, it's the wind.
It's always the wind here.
It is. When you combine those gusty winds with the sudden temperature drop, we are actually looking at wind shear values as low as 24 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah, that is bone chilling for a region that was sitting in the 90s literally 2 days ago. That is a nearly 70 degree swing in the feels-like temperature in roughly 48 hours.
That is a total shock to the system.
Yeah.
So beyond just needing to dig out a heavy jacket, why does this actually matter? What is the real risk profile we're looking at?
The risk profile shifts from just, you know, discomfort to actual danger, primarily because of the dry air. The National Weather Service has issued red flag warnings.
Break that down for us. What specifically triggers a red flag warning? I think a lot of people see that alert buzz on their phone and just assume it means it's windy outside.
It's much more specific than that. A red flag warning means you have the unholy trinity of fire weather. You have strong, sustained winds, critically low relative humidity, and dry fuel on the ground.
Like dead leaves and brush.
Exactly. The air is so incredibly dry right now that if a wildfire sparks, the wind is going to drive it faster than local firefighters can contain it.
So this is a serious don't toss your cigarette butt kind of moment.
Absolutely. But it goes way beyond that. You need to be incredibly careful with machinery or parking cars with hot exhaust pipes on dry grass or really anything that throws a spark. Even a loose chain dragging from a landscaping trailer on the highway can spark a massive roadside fire in these conditions.
And on the flip side of that, looking out at the water, I saw some marine alerts popping up too.
Yes, rough surf and dangerous rip currents. It is definitely not a beach day today, despite how warm the ocean water itself might feel relative to the freezing air. The Atlantic is really churning right now.
Now, we can't talk about Florida cold snacks without mentioning our unofficial, slightly bizarre local weather gauge.
The falling iguanas.
The falling iguanas.
It sounds like a total urban legend to outsiders, but if you live down here, you know it is a biological reality. When temperatures hit the 40s, the invasive green iguanas get cold stunned.
Because they're cold-blooded.
Right. They rely entirely on external heat from the sun to regulate their metabolism.
Yeah.
So when it drops this low, their bodies essentially just shut down to preserve energy. They lose their grip on the tree branches and just drop like stones onto the sidewalk.
Just raining lizards. It's honestly the most Florida problem imaginable.
Essentially, yes. And the FWC, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, always reminds us that they usually aren't actually actually dead.
Right, they're just sleeping.
They will wake right back up once they warm up in the sun later today. But since they are an invasive species and they do a lot of damage to local infrastructure, there are allowances for homeowners to legally collect them while they're stunned.
Right. But the main takeaway for most of us walking around today is just watch your head.
And bring your pets inside. You really don't want your dog tangling with a frozen lizard that suddenly thaws out and wakes up angry. Also, cover your sensitive plants. This kind of deep cold can burn tropical landscaping very, very quickly.
Okay, moving from the natural environment to the built environment. This is where we need to slow down a bit and really unpack something quite complicated. We need to talk about the home rule situation.
This is arguably the most significant story for the long-term future of Vero Beach and Sebastian right now. It's getting a lot of traction in local coffee shops and neighborhood groups, but the actual details often get completely lost in the noise.
And it feels like whenever we hear the word zoning, our eyes just glaze over. But the stakes here are effectively whether Vero stays looking like Vero or if it starts looking like a dense metropolitan suburb.
That is not an exaggeration at all. The core conflict here is a classic tug of war between local control, what we refer to as home rule, and state mandates coming straight out of Tallahassee. We have two very specific bills moving through the legislature right now that you really need to know about. That's HB 1143 and SB 1342.
Let's take them one by one, starting with HB 1143. They are branding it as the Starter Homes Act.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds pretty innocuous. I mean, who doesn't want starter homes for young families?
Right. The branding is excellent. And we should be clear. Everyone generally agrees we need more entry-level housing. But you have to look at the mechanism the bill actually uses to achieve that. The way the bill tries to create starter homes is by prohibiting cities from enforcing certain local regulations that make building expensive.
And what's the big regulation on the chopping block?
The biggest one is parking minimums. It would stop cities from enforcing them.
Okay, let's play that out for the listener. If I am a developer under this bill, I can build a brand new house without a driveway.
Or a garage. The state's logic is that driveways, garages, and parking pads cost a lot of money to the poor, and they take up valuable land. If you cut them out of the design, the house is cheaper to build and therefore cheaper to buy.
But people still own cars. Especially here. We don't exactly have a sprawling subway system in Indian River County.
That is exactly the local fear. If developers don't have to build driveways, those cars don't just magically disappear, they end up parked out on the street. This can turn a quiet, spacious suburban street into a one-lane obstacle course.
Which is a nightmare for emergency vehicles, fire trucks, and garbage trucks.
Exactly. And the bill also mandates the approval of something called lot splits.
What does that look like in practice?
It leads to what urban planners call zero lot line housing. Imagine a house where one of the exterior walls is built right smack on the property line. You don't have side yards between neighbors. You have blank walls and houses packed very, very tightly together.
So it's about density.
High density. And then there's the other bill, SB 1342, the Transit-Oriented Development Bill. This one is even more aggressive in overriding local control. It overrides local zoning within 500 acres of a transit stop.
500 acres, that is a huge radius.
It's massive. It essentially draws a giant circle around any bus stop or train station and says, inside this circle, the state of Florida decides the density, not the city council. It legally mandates higher density and taller buildings in those specific zones.
And this is where the panic really sets in for locals. Vero Beach is famous or infamous, maybe, depending on who you ask for its strict height limits. The whole identity of the town is low-rise buildings, lots of sky, no concrete canyons blocking the ocean breeze.
Which is exactly why Sebastian Mayor Fred Jones has been so vocal about this lately. He is arguing strongly that local municipalities need to control their own growth to preserve the specific character of their communities. Residents are terrified of losing the single-family protections that keep their neighborhoods quiet. They view this as an existential threat to their entire way of life.
But let's play devil's advocate here for a second, because our mission is to look at all the source material impartially. Tallahassee isn't doing this just to be villains in a cartoon. What is the actual problem they're trying to solve?
That is the crucial context here. They are trying to solve a genuine mathematical crisis regarding housing affordability. The Florida Housing Coalition reports that 70% of renters earning between $50,000 and $75,000 are cost burdened.
Cost burdened is the technical term. In plain English, that just means they're broke because of their rent check.
Yes. It means they are spending more than 30% and sometimes more than 50% of their total income just to have a roof over their heads. And it is not just young professionals starting out. Seniors on fixed incomes are getting absolutely crushed by inflation and rising rents right now.
So the argument from the state is essentially saying local governments are protecting their aesthetic at the expense of regular people having a place to live.
Precisely. The state views local zoning boards as the bottleneck to the housing supply. They believe that if you cut the red tape, like those parking requirements and the lot size limits we talked about, developers will finally build more supply and prices will naturally come down. The state views local preservation as a form of exclusion that hurts the workforce.
It really is a fundamental battle between access and character.
It is. And there is no perfect, painless answer. If you build more density, you undeniably change the town. If you don't build, you price out the very workers who run the town's hospitals, schools, and restaurants. But if you live here, you are going to feel the result of this debate one way or another.
So if you are listening to this and you have a strong opinion, whether you desperately want more affordable housing options or you want to fiercely protect the current low-density zoning, this is the time to speak up. The House Commerce Committee is hearing these arguments right now.
And we are just breaking down the legislation so you understand what's on the table.
Right. We'll link the contact info for Senator Aaron Gorrell and Representative Robert Brackett in the show notes for you. This is moving fast, so if you care, you need to make the call.
Moving from the legislature to the judiciary, we actually have a milestone this week that is much less about political conflict and more about a historic evolution in our community.
This is actually a really cool statistic story. For the first time in history, the Indian River County Bench is entirely female.
Every single judge, both at the county level and the circuit level, it is a complete sweep.
That is a huge shift. Who are the women making history here?
It is a very impressive roster of legal minds. On the circuit court side, you have judges Cynthia Cox, Victoria Griffin, Anastasia Norman, and Rebecca White. And in county court, you have judges Robin Stone and Nicole Mintz.
To give people some context on just how big a deal this wasn't exactly a diverse professional field a few decades ago in Florida.
Not at all. The 19th Judicial Circuit didn't even swear in its first female judge until 1989. It was very much an old boys club. Judge Cynthia Cox, who is actually the senior judge now, has spoken very openly about her early days practicing in the 80s and 90s.
What was her experience like?
She said she had to learn to be extremely tough because condescending comments from male colleagues were just part of the daily routine in the courtroom back then.
It's amazing to think that really wasn't even that long ago. Mm-hmm. And now she's the one leading the way.
Yeah.
But let's dig a little deeper into the impact of this. Does an all-female bench actually change how justice is administered in the county? Or is it just a nice photo op for Women's History Month?
That is the most fascinating part of this deep dive.
Yeah.
Research, as well as plenty of local anecdote, suggests that diversity on the bench brings very different life experiences to how the law is interpreted and applied. Take Judge Robin Stone, for example.
Yeah.
She brings a very specific professional background. Before she was a lawyer, she used to be a middle school teacher.
Honestly, that feels like the perfect training ground for a courtroom, dealing with unruly behavior and confusing excuses all day.
It really is. And she actually says she uses those exact teaching skills to explain the law to litigants who are standing in front of her, nervous or confused. It changes the tone of the courtroom from being purely punitive to being somewhat educational.
Mm.
It makes the justice system feel far more accessible if people actually understand what is happening to them.
And then you have Judge Rebecca White.
Right. She is a mother of 6 children. She focuses heavily on early childhood court. When you have a judge who deeply understands the intense logistics of raising a family, the nuances of child development, and quite frankly, the chaos of a large household, that perspective inevitably shapes how they handle delicate cases involving minors. It is a bench defined by resilience and a very human touch.
Sadly, as we welcome this new era in the courts, we are also saying goodbye to a local legend who really represented the previous era of the legal community. Chester Clem passed away on February 18th at age 88.
A true titan of the Treasure Coast. They called him the Matlock of the area.
For our younger listeners who might not catch that television reference, Matlock was the quintessential calm, southern gentleman lawyer on TV who always managed to solve the case with extreme politeness and street smarts.
And that nickname fit Chester Clem perfectly. He was the longest practicing attorney on the Treasure Coast. He arrived in Vero Beach in 1964 as a rookie lawyer. Think about how much this place has physically and culturally changed since 1964. It was a completely different world.
He didn't just sit back and watch it change, though. He actively helped shape it. He served as the town attorney for Indian River Shores for 43 years.
Which is an unheard-of tenure. That kind of longevity means he guided that specific community through four decades of growth, zoning battles, and environmental changes. He was also a state representative back in the early 70s. But what stands out in all the accounts of his life isn't just his resume, it's his personal style. There is this great detail we found about his car.
The Chevy Caprice.
Yes. He drove a Chevy Caprice 200,000 miles across the state of Florida just to meet voters face to face.
That is a level of retail politics and genuine dedication you just don't see anymore. Now you just get an automated text message asking for a $5 donation.
Exactly. He was a fiscal conservative, a fierce defender of the local citrus industry, and an environmentalist. But above all of that, he was known for his civility. In a time where politics and law feel so incredibly divisive, Chester Clem was a reminder that you can be a small-town country lawyer and still command immense respect just by how you treat the people across the aisle from you.
A huge loss for the community. Our thoughts are certainly with his family.
We do have to pivot now to some more concerning news regarding community safety. There's been a few incidents this week that are sobering, and we need to look at what they mean for you as an average resident.
The first one is just heartbreaking. A 12-year-old boy in Lincoln Park, which is just south of Indian River County, was hit by a stray bullet while he was inside his own home.
This happened late Friday night on North 22nd Street. A neighbor in the area, Lorenzo Sturry, reported hearing 10 to 15 rapid shots. It sounds like it was a very chaotic exchange of gunfire outside. One of the bullets went completely through a brick wall and struck the child inside.
Through a brick wall? That speaks to the caliber or the high velocity of the weapon being used. That is terrifying because it breaks that fundamental sense of security we all have. The idea that if we are inside our house, we are safe.
It does. The boy was airlifted to St. Mary's in West Palm Beach. The silver lining here is that he is expected to fully recover. But the police are still actively looking for tips. This wasn't a targeted attack on the child, obviously, but the recklessness puts everyone in that neighborhood at risk. If you know anything at all, please contact the Fort Pierce Police or Crime Stoppers.
We also had a fatal crash down near Indian River State College this week.
Yes, at the intersection of Virginia Avenue and South 35th Street, a Chevy Silverado was making a turn when it was hit by a speeding Dodge Charger. The passenger in the truck, Timothy A. Ecker, tragically lost his life in the collision. The police investigation is really focusing on the speed of that charger.
It's a tragic reminder for all of us. That intersection is always busy with college students and commuters. Speed limits aren't suggestions.
No, they aren't.
On a different note, still safety-related, but financial safety this time, the skimmers are back in Vero.
Yes, this is a crime of opportunity that spikes periodically in our area. Two suspects were caught on camera installing skimming devices at the TD Bank on 20th Street, right over near the Jackie Robinson training complex.
Let's give a clear description for the listeners, because these guys were caught on the security camera pretty clearly.
Suspect number one is a slim male with dark hair, and he was carrying a shoulder bag. Suspect number two is heavier set, has a distinct red beard, and a tattoo on his right forearm. He was wearing a tan Gillette vest, like a puffy outdoor vest.
So if you use that specific ATM around February 18th, or if you recognize those descriptions, you need to check your bank statements immediately and call Detective Gio Fonseca.
And for everyone else listening, do the wiggle test.
The wiggle test. Explain that one.
Before you insert your debit card into any gas pump or ATM, grab the plastic card reader slot and give it a firm shake. If it feels loose, bulky, or misaligned in any way, do not use it. Skimmers are usually just cheap overlays that sit right on top of the real reader. A simple little wiggle can save you a massive headache and an empty checking account.
Simple advice that actually works. Let's shift gears to the local economy. We had some really interesting data come out of the job fair down in Fort Pierce that tells us a lot about the current labor market here.
This was the 11th annual City of Fort Pierce Job Fair at the Havert L. Fenn Center. The big headline number here is the turnout. Nearly 1,000 job seekers showed up to meet with about 90 employers.
That is a huge turnout. Does that signal a healthy, active economy or a struggling one?
It's a double-edged sword. It shows high engagement from the community, but it also tightly correlates with a recent uptick in unemployment we've seen in the state data. There is clearly a lot of demand for work right now. The competition for those open roles is getting tighter. The hot sectors hiring right now were healthcare, skilled trades, and logistics.
I noticed from the reports that they put a special emphasis on local veterans this year.
They did. Veterans got special early access to the floor, and 63 vets were successfully served. This is crucial because translating military skills into civilian resume language is notoriously difficult.
Right. You'd be an absolute expert in logistics in the Army, running massive, complex supply chains across the globe. But if you don't use the specific corporate buzzwords on your resume, an automated HR algorithm might just filter you out completely.
Exactly. Or you have intense leadership skills that just don't neatly fit a standard retail manager checkbox. Events like this job fair help bridge that gap face-to-face, where a veteran can explain their actual value directly to a human recruiter.
Absolutely. Now, let's lighten things up as we wrap up. We've talked about rent burdens, inflation, and job hunting. If you are hungry and trying to save a few bucks this week, we have a breakdown of the best local dining deals.
We call this the Culinary Value Guide. If you look north towards Sebastian and Grant, there are some real gems right now.
Okay, hit me with the highlights. I am starving, and I love a good deal.
Let's start with the Tiki Bar and Grill up in Sebastian. If you like seafood, Thursday is your day. They have a lobster claw salad roll for $20. But for a real everyday bargain, Tuesday is Taco Tuesday, with three tacos for just $12.
Hard to beat cheap tacos right by the water. What about barbecue?
You are spoiled for choice. Rib City at Grant Station has a great kids eat free deal on Monday nights that is huge relief for young families trying to manage a grocery budget right now. And on Wednesday, they have their city sandwich for just $10.99.
And I know Woody's in Sebastian is a local staple.
They've been there since 2001. If you have a serious appetite, like a really serious appetite, Tuesday is their all-you-can-eat ribs special for $25.99. Or for a classic comfort meal, Monday is meatloaf night for $13.99.
And finally, for the boaters out there,
the Old Fish House down in Grant Valkaria, marker 35. They have midday specials like $1 wings and a 15-13 salad for exactly
$5.68. $5.68. That is suspiciously specific.
It is, but at that price and with that view of the water, I am not asking any questions. I'm just ordering the salad.
Fair enough. Now, speaking of views, we have a major astronomical event coming up that you'll want to know about. It's not happening this week, but you need to mark your calendar now because it's going to be early.
Yes, this is for the early risers or the very late night owls. On Tuesday morning, March 3, 2026, we are going to see a blood moon, a total lunar eclipse.
And just to clarify for everyone, we don't need the special glasses for this one, right? Mm-hmm. Not like the solar eclipse where you can burn your retinas.
Correct. It is totally safe for the naked eye. It starts around 3.44 a.m., but the maximum view, which is when the moon turns that really deep copper red color, is going to be at 6.33 a.m.
So basically, get up a little before sunrise, make your coffee, step out onto the patio, and look up.
Exactly. It's going to be visible right up until about 6.45 a.m., so it's just the perfect, peaceful way to start your Tuesday. You just have to hope for clear skies.
Fingers crossed for that. Well, looking back at this week, it's really a mix of caution and community pride. We've got the wild weather shifts and the ATM scams to watch out for, but we also have this incredible milestone in our local courts and the enduring legacy of folks like Chester Clem.
It is a great reminder that our community is always evolving. Yeah. Whether it is the weather patterns, the zoning laws, or the people leading us, things are always changing. The best we can do is stay informed, keep an eye on our neighbors, and maybe enjoy a cheap taco while we're at it.
Couldn't say it better myself. That's all for today. Thanks for being with us, and see you next week.